The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
8 o'clock hour underway. And here on the Friday show, we have much, much to do. In the 9 o'clock hour, 1 hour from now, another visit from some of our Food from the Poor guest hosts. We have been regaled with the copyright wisdom, copyrights, patents of attorney Colin Cahoon. We had Ben and Katie, the lovely young couple. Ben sent me some affectionate pushback on the notion of holding off on that speaker's race. He said, nope, I want everybody out of the gate now. I want to know where these people are now. I want to know how conservative they are now, how courageous they are now. And it's not a bad point. But anyway, in emailing me that, he sent me some pictures of him proposing to his wife. Isn't that nice? Yeah. It was at the top of the Wills Tower, formerly the Sears Tower, a zillion miles up in the sky. And it's at that acrylic glass looking thing that juts out into space. And there he is on one knee proposing to her. I can't look at the picture. I told Lisa about it. I said, honey, look at this. She very nearly ran screaming from the room. They're a lovely couple, and the scene is beautiful. But they appear to be floating in space 1,500 feet up in the air. So anyway, so we met them, and that was great. Jim Castell was in talking about all manner of things in an emotional and wonderful, far-ranging thing. Guess who we get to meet an hour from now? Four entrepreneurial women who are all doing some form of the same thing. They have Painting with a Twist franchises. I drive by them. I see them. I understand what it is. It involves two things that I enjoy doing every once in a while, painting and drinking wine, limited amounts of both. Painting with a Twist is you go in there and you start drinking and start painting. What's not to love? And so the way this company was born and what the stuff they do is interesting, and they'll be interesting. And so looking forward to meeting. Kim Garrison was the one. She called us and said, hey, can I bring friends? Can we pony up for the required entry fee for the donation to Food for the Poor? And we said, sure. So that should be quite the rodeo. Half hour from now, Dennis Prager. If you love this show, if you love Mike Gallagher, if you love Larry Elder, if you love Dennis Prager noon to two, and you've heard Dennis talk extensively about the beginning of the project of his lifetime, The Rational Bible, a commentary on the Bible. Dennis will join us at 8:35 to talk about that. Now, you know what it's time to do. I know I haven't forgotten. I know what it's time to do. I want to give you a heads up on something, because here it comes. Here comes the quintessential and traditional thing that we do every week at this time. Coming out of the very familiar will be something that is, I'm guessing, starkly unfamiliar, and yet there will be a comfort zone to it. You're going to hear just a magnificent sound of a band that I have discovered. And the way I discovered it is the weirdest thing in the world. We are actually enjoying, I was skeptical, but we are enjoying the reboot of American Idol. And they got one, every year they find one guy who's like sort of a long-haired rocker and a throwback, even though he's probably 23. And this guy's name is Cade. I forget Cade's last name. Fainer, Phoner, blah, blah, blah. Cade, all right? And he busted out with a tune as they were getting down to the final 24, and I didn't even know what it was. So I looked up a lyric or two, and it turned out to be a song called No Good by a band called Kaleo, K-A-L-E-O. So you're going to hear a little bit of them. It's going to blend together really, really nicely. So let me let this unfold, and then keep your car on the road when I tell you where they are from. So you don't know that that's coming, but you know this is coming. It's Friday.
I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got you.
You're a broken man. They come around and just die in the shade of your head. I don't expect you to understand. Just keep telling yourself there's no shame. They don't know.
These guys are good. Has a kind of a Black Keys sort of feel to it, doesn't it?
Oh, hot blood, love is going.
Hot blood. Not hot blood, Ed. That would be Foreigner. So let me and I don't know, let me give, before I do the big reveal, here's No Good. Like the amp plug just isn't in all the way. I love that. That is almost a Jack White, Jack and Meg White Stripes feel to it, doesn't it? So anyway, Kaleo, K-A-L-E-O, their debut album is called A/B, and they are from, okay, let me guide you into this softly. It's not America. Wait a minute, what? Sounds like this thunderous blues-based rock. What do you mean they're not from America? Okay, British or something like that? Nope. I mean, that would work. There's a lot of blues rock-influenced stuff going on in the UK, but nope, not the UK. In fact, they are not from an English-speaking country. Or not from, well, I mean, they're not from, the English is not their their first language. In fact, there's one song on here. Okay, for versatility, I know I'm just going nuts here, and I'm going to do the reveal here in a minute. For versatility, here's something a little acoustic that is just beautiful. And this is in their native language. See if you can identify it. Language you run into a lot. Sound the kind of Eastern European? No. In fact, I think it'd be about as Western European as you can get. Ah, now you got it. You geography dogs have got it now. So completing the trifecta, we heard Hot Blood, No Good, and Vorvaglasjoj. They are Icelandic, kids. Icelandic. Fresh out of Reykjavik, Kaleo, K-A-L-E-O. What a week of discovery. Was Ashley McBride this week or last week? The sick day totally threw me off. I don't even know what month it is anymore. Yeah, but I know that was Tuesday, but I don't know. So anyway, Ashley McBride in the world of American country and Kaleo, K-A-L-E-O. Their album is A-B, and every single bit of it is just knock down, drag out, fantastic. So there you go, no charge. All right, so here it comes on Sunday, the onslaught of Stephanopoulos and Comey, which, again, I'll watch it so you don't have to. But if ABC is going to throw us a snippet or two I mean, okay, because this is going to be the talked about thing on the cocktail party circuit, and I want you, see, if you're going to be walking around, my job is to arm you with good, solid talking points that are not just things that you say because I say them, but things that you've used out of your own mind, out of your own brain, and I got to tell you, as instructive as anything from the interview itself is the Stephanopoulos's teenage girl fawning, as he makes clear that Comey is very much going to revisit that mob boss comparison.
He did that time and time again. He also writes that the president is unethical, untethered to truth. And guys, he went even farther. In the interview, I spent several hours this week with him. It was such an intense experience that I couldn't believe at times what I was hearing. And Comey said he could not believe what he was saying. Startling and unprecedented judgments from a former FBI director about a sitting president.
Startling. I'm not startled. Who is startled by Trump hatred anymore? Whose eyes are widened? Who is intrigued? Oh, there are people who are energized by it. There are people who love the Comey book and love this interview. It's called Trump Haters.
January 6, 2017, Trump Tower. FBI Director James Comey set to meet President-elect Donald Trump for the first time.
As you headed into Trump Tower that day, were you nervous?
Yes.
Comey was with a group of intelligence agency heads, briefing Trump and his top aides on how the Russians interfered in our election.
President-elect Trump's first question was to confirm that it had no impact on the election. And the conversation, to my surprise, moved into a PR conversation about how the Trump team would position this and what they could say about this. They actually started talking about drafting a press release with us still sitting there.
It's called using actual findings from actual federal law enforcement people in order to put up a defense against what he knew was coming. An all-out assault on his presidency. Little did he know that part of that assault would come from the FBI director who was sitting in his office on that day.
And the reason that was so striking to me is that that's just not done. That the intelligence community does intelligence, the White House does PR and spin.
How many? It's like a drinking game. How many times, except that maybe we should use orange juice at this time. How many times will Comey say that the FBI is above politics? How many times will Trump-hating, preening, fawning drama queen James Comey say that, hey, we just shoot straight, we just call balls and strikes, as he is the head of the spear of the corruption of federal law enforcement, seething with Trump hatred?
Said you were struck by what they didn't ask.
Very much. No one, to my recollection, asked, so what's coming next from the Russians? How might we stop it? What's the future look like? It was all, what can we say about what they did and how it affects the election?
It's January, what do you say, 6th? It's January 6th. I mean, here comes the inauguration. This is very much a right here, right now kind of thing. He's not even president yet. You know, the time will come just to address, I mean, we're not going to have another election for 2 years at this point. You know, so we got plenty of time to take a look at what the Russians have done, what kind of mischief they have engaged in. But obviously, we were neck deep in the fiction that the Russians had denied Hillary Clinton the election to which she was so nobly entitled. So that was the brush fire that needed to be extinguished. And Brother Comey just didn't want to do it.
Just had.
Comey then asked to meet alone with Trump to warn him about that now infamous Steele dossier. Unverified information on Trump's ties to Russia, including allegations of Trump's encounters with prostitutes in Moscow.
I'm about to meet with a person who doesn't know me. He's just been elected president of the United States. By all accounts, and from my watching him during the campaign, could be volatile.
Could be volatile.
And I'm about to talk to him about allegations that he was involved with prostitutes in Moscow and that the Russians taped it.
Which has been discredited from the nanosecond it came out. That has carried the taint of fraud ever since it came out. But I mean, is it something that you need to discuss? Sure. But the notion that the gravity hung heavy, I'm about to lower the boom, and this president could be volatile.
And have leverage over him.
Was there any choice there? Why, if this was salacious, mm-hmm. and this particular part of the dossier unverified, still unverified,
Thank
by the
you.
Way?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So far as when I got fired, it was unverified.
Uh-huh. Did you tell him that the Steele dossier had been financed by his political opponents?
No. I didn't even think I used the...
Oh, whoa. Whoa. Let me revisit.
Term Steele...
...had been financed by...
When I got...
But you know what? I said I was going to pay attention to this, and the things that anything that did actually raise an eyebrow, because my dog knows how this is going to go. It's going to be a full-blown attack on Trump. But if a moment occurs in which George Stephanopoulos actually asks a good and pertinent question, let's relive that moment. He's asking Comey, did you inform him that the dossier was that part of its complete unreliability was the fact that it was financed by the Democratic National Committee and then handed over to Hillary?
Fired. It was unverified.
Did you tell him that the Steele dossier had been financed by his political opponents?
No.
Wonder why.
I didn't even think I used the term Steele dossier. I just talked about additional material.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have a right to know that?
Mm-hmm.
That had been financed by his political opponents?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
I know everything else. I know about a higher loyalty. I know about truth. I know about lies. I know about leadership. I know about honor. But did the president have the right to know that this piece of crap, salacious dossier was a political hit? Did he have a kind of a right to know that? Oh, I do not know about that. I do not know.
It wasn't necessary for my goal, which was to alert him that we had this information.
That wasn't your only goal, Jimmy. That was not your only goal. And now we know what your entire goal is. We're on to you. We're on to you. 823, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Let me make a list. The ways in which familiarity with Dennis Prager has brought me joy. Started with being a listener to him some years ago when I was down the road at another radio station. Then I think the first Dennis book that I read was Happiness is a Serious Problem. And then I went and read everything else he's ever done. Then 6 years ago this summer, I get to walk into the big umbrella, under the big umbrella of the Salem Media Group. And I get to hear him. And then I get to fill in for him. And that is an unbelievable joy and honor. And so on the list every once in a while with the occasional book tour. Well, first of all, the occasional corporate confab where we're all out somewhere in California or something, hanging out and doing stuff. That's a joy. But when we can welcome him to this program, to have him talk about something that is this meaningful, it defies description. So I'll just hand the baton to him and we'll get started. Dennis Prager, welcome, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, it is an equal honor to be with you, Mark. Let me tell you.
I want to get to the title and the modifier, The Rational Bible. Why does it require that adjective?
My vehicle in life to faith, to God, to religion, to the Bible, has been reason. That is a blessing, and it is a curse. The blessing is for me, I just have to have reason. I can't do things on faith alone. And that's also a curse because I don't have the same highs, if you will, religious highs that a lot of people have who are more mystical than I, or even, if you will, more spiritual. I never call myself spiritual. I call myself religious, but I never call myself spiritual. So my vehicle is reason, and everyone has his or her own vehicle, hopefully. But the good part is reason is universal. And so when I wrote this volume one of my commentary on the first five books, explanation and commentary on the first five books of the Bible, I had in mind, believe it or not, because a lot of authors have, you know, some proverbial reader in mind when they write their book, and I do. My reader was someone in China who never heard of Noah or Cain and Abel or Moses. And I had to appeal to that person using the one thing we have in common, and that's reason. So for those who think it's just faith, this is the perfect book.
Does that mean that the flood has to be literal?
No, it doesn't, interestingly. My take on that is that people are preoccupied with what is not significant in asking what is literal or not. I believe that it is divine. If God uses a parable, why is that less divine than if God actually did it? It still comes from God. That's what the text is divine. Whether the text relates a literal story or not with Adam and Eve is, for this believer, simply not significant. Now, I am totally happy to take it literally, and I am totally happy to take it as parable. It doesn't matter. It's God's word either way.
I'm also totally happy in a world that we're very troubled by, the land of I don't know, that I will never know in this life what is literal and what is parable. God does not intend for me to have that with the clarity that I have a mathematics equation, and I'm okay with that too.
Yes. Moreover, what matters is what is the lesson? For example, the first book, the one that came out last week, is Exodus, the second book of the Bible. The first one is Genesis. That's coming out next year. So I'm finishing it right now. And with regard to the flood, what I do, among other things, is, and this is what is significant, whether it's parable or literal, and that is I defend God's decision, because all those who knock the Bible portray God as barbaric for bringing a flood, whether literal or parable, on the face of the earth. I love God for it, and I have a difficulty loving God sometimes. But I love God for having done that, because it means that God is preoccupied with goodness. He sees that everybody got bad, and he says, you know what? This is not why I invented people to hurt each other. I am going to start again.
And create a because we obsess about the flood, and without the postscript of the new covenant, which is why the flood happened in the first place.
Yes, and as I put it, God realizes, and that may sound almost heretical to some people, but it's exactly what it says in the Bible. God realizes that conscience alone doesn't work to make good people. There needs to be divine revelation of moral law. So God gives basic moral laws to Noah and his descendants, and ultimately even that doesn't work. The world did get better, but didn't get good. And so then there's a third revelation, and that is at Sinai with the Ten Commandments.
All right, Dennis Prager is here, and the book is The Rational Bible. It begins with Exodus, with others to follow. It's out now, Amazon, wherever books are sold. Dennis Prager, The Rational Bible, Exodus. And we could do, you know, actual scriptural references, but I want to go big picture, because it has informed so many of the shows that you have done, and from my earliest memory of listening to you. Man is not inherently good. It is possible to be a moral atheist, but it's just far harder.
Right. Well, obviously they're related. So number one, perhaps the greatest myth of the post quote unquote Enlightenment period is that people are basically good. I must say that of all the beliefs that many people have, that's the one I have the most contempt for. How people could say that and know any history is a total puzzle to me. How people could know just the 20th century with the communist and Nazi genocides, with the amount of evil on earth, with the universality of slavery and the way people were treated, with the universality of wife beating, until indeed this Bible put an end to all of these things. These things were ended by this book. And there's a reason for it. But how people could believe people are basically good. How many times did you tell your children, I don't mean you, Mark, though you and I are included, I mean you to the audience.
Yes.
How many times do we say to our children, say thank you? The answer, I'm sure, is well over 10,000 times, probably 100,000.
Yep.
Now, why? Why? If people are basically good, why do we have to tell them say thank you more than once? They realize, oh, of course, I'm a grateful human being. It's the nice thing to say, the right thing to say to someone who did a good for me. But it doesn't help. We have to make good people. We don't start out that way. And this is the insight that Christians and Jews share, as so many others. That's why we have Judeo-Christian values, because of this book.
You invoke a list of evils, and part of the value of Scripture is identifying evils and speaking truth to them. Why is slavery not on the list of evils that the Bible simply says don't do it?
Well, the Bible does simply say don't do it. The slavery, overwhelmingly the slavery described in Exodus, and I spend a lot of time on this in the book, obviously, the slavery described is overwhelmingly indentured servitude, where people would pay off debts or work because there was no other and get room and board, plus they would get a Sabbath, plus if they were hurt, the owner was hurt. If you ran away from your owner, these are laws in the same Bible. If you ran away from your owner, you were not allowed to be returned to him. Do you know that a vast number of the people who settled the United States, white people, came here exactly under those terms of indentured servitude? It was the vehicle to get them started in life and out of poverty. Secondly, the Bible would forbade directly what happened to Africans. Do not steal, which is the eighth commandment. Do not steal, first and foremost, was always understood as do not steal a person. You may not kidnap a person. And there's a specific law in these first five books. You may not steal a person and sell him. African transatlantic slave trade was banned by the Bible. Simple as that. So people need to know these things, and that's part of the reason the book is there. Let me just add one thing, if I may, Mark, because
sure.
I know, obviously, as a fellow talk show host, time is always limited.
No, you're good.
I just want people to know my aim here is to get the Bible back to be the most respected book in America. It was, even by people who didn't attend church. Abraham Lincoln rarely attended church. He read the Bible every night. Until the 1950s, it was understood to be the greatest book ever written. But now it is mocked. It is to get it back in as America's book. And I will say I had a good beginning because it's probably the first time ever a Bible commentary was a national bestseller. It is now one of the, I think, number six in the country of all books printed. It is number six. And it was number two when it came out last week. It's starting something, and I want people to have it because I think it's life-changing and because I want to make the Bible the key book in America.
Well, like the PragerU videos and like the show, let us do not do Dennis a favor, which we love to do because we love you, but let us do it'll say something good about America if this book is enormously read and enormously popular. The Rational Bible, Exodus, from Dennis Prager. I actually have another couple of minutes, and I want to wrap up on a return to that modifier, rational. What if your intended audience is the skeptic? What about the person who says, Dennis, the points you make about various areas of Scripture are fine, but what if the very notion of a supernatural God that I will never see, what if that violates my sense of rationality? What do you tell that person?
There's something wrong with their sense of rationality then. No,
it's a perfect
sincerely.
Answer. It's right. Go ahead.
If somebody says, look, I will only believe what I can empirically prove, mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. But if they will say reason argues strongly for a creator, that's the point. Reason argues strongly. I never argue that there is a proof. But between atheism and theism, on purely rational grounds, the odds against life existing are so much greater than 14 billion years would allow for, that on purely rational grounds, there's a creator. The leap of faith in my life, in my faculty of reason, is not to there being a creator. We take a leap of faith that God is good because there's so much bad on earth. So that I agree, and that I try to show rationally, and why the Bible so argues for God's goodness. That I understand. If somebody says, I look around, it's hard for me to believe God is good. Okay, we have a good argument. But that God exists, that's rational.
And therein lies the title, The Rational Bible, Exodus Edition, Genesis coming soon. That promises me a series of interviews of this type, and I cannot wait. And can't wait for the time to be in the chair when you're away. It's an incredible honor, and I so, so appreciate the time today. It's show prep time for you, and we'll all be listening today and every day.
God bless you, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks, Dennis. Dennis Prager, at Dennis Prager on Twitter, DennisPrager.com. And go get it. Now would be good. The Rational Bible, Exodus. Check it out. 850, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Out of New Braunfels, if you go back far enough. Sunshine. Lee Nash and the boys of Sixpence None the Richer. Little Waiting on the Sun. Let me tell you what I'm waiting for. I am intrigued at this at the outset. We've welcomed a bunch of people who have ponied up at the level that we required to come in and sort of co-host and hang out during the 9 o'clock hour. And usually it's like a person. Sometimes it's a wonderful young man who brings his bride. And sometimes it's four women who are all intertwined and interrelated by one thing. And that is their relationship to a business. Have you ever driven by, or if you've ever been, that's great. You're one up on me. An outfit called Painting with a Twist. The premise is you come in, and I think it's great for corporate bonding or what that corporate bonding that involves a moderate blood alcohol level always works best. You paint, you drink wine, and you go home. So what's not to love? So a lady named Kim Garrison called Rhonda and said, look, we want to do the donation at that level to co-host, but we're going to kind of pony up and split it. And can we bring like four people? And Rhonda asked me, I said, let's go. If they can do that and help that many kids at Food for the Poor and help that many people in Haiti and that many people in Guatemala and the places I've been blessed to go, then let's do it. So let's meet them. And the joy here is I have absolutely no idea what's about to happen. Of course, that's true of most hours here on the show. So it is 8:58 and I'm Mark Davis and it is Friday. So just cancel appointments because we're going to bring them on in here and unleash the magic in the 9 o'clock hour. Next.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.